This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and we have with us tonight Dr. Eric Pearl. We're going to be talking about his new book, The Reconnection. How are you, Eric?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for coming on.
No, it's my pleasure.
Tell us a bit about you, Eric, before we get started, and where people can find you and get a copy of your book.
Well, you can find the book anywhere, Amazon.com or any major bookstore. It's called The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself. It's in 27 languages so far. And I teach seminars about 45 weeks a year all around the globe. The short version for people to understand what we're talking about tonight is that I was a chiropractor, and somewhere in my 12th year in practice, a few strange things happened. A lamp turned itself on next to my bed and woke me up. I felt people in my house. I got up and went hunting for...
I don't mean to laugh. I understand. But it's just,
what?
I'm not laughing. It just sounds funny.
It is funny. No, it is funny. I got up bravely with a knife, a can of pepper spray, and my Doberman pincher and went hunting. Couldn't find anyone, although I still felt they were there, so I went back to sleep. And when I went into the office on that Monday, seven of my patients insisted that they felt people in the room with us, standing there, walking, running. Two of them actually looked me straight in the eye and said it felt as if someone was flying around the ceiling. Now, this was my 12th year in practice, so no one had ever said anything like this to me before. You would think that that would catch my attention, but at the same time, other patients were saying to me, I can feel your hands before you touch me. And I'm saying, oh, yeah, sure, you can. Close your eyes. So they'd close their eyes, and they'd hold my hands aimed at certain areas of their body, and they'd tell me, right shoulder, left ankle. So it sort of became a game because, well, it was my office, and I could have whatever games I wanted. And
mm-hmm.
As I played with that, my palms blistered a couple of times, and my palm actually bled once, not like a stigmata, but, you know, more as if you just accidentally stick it with a needle or a pin, that little bit of blood that comes out. And the next thing I know, people are having healings. They're getting up out of wheelchairs, and vision is returning, and hearing, and they're showing me that their laboratory results where their cancer tumors had vanished. Not everyone, but a lot of them, enough so that we knew that something real was happening. And as we watched this, patients would say, what did you do? And I said, nothing, and don't tell anyone, which went over about as big as Nancy Reagan saying no to drugs. And soon everyone started coming and going, I'll have what she had. And the next thing I know, people are saying, teach this. And I said, teach it? There's no way I can teach this. I mean, I don't know what it is. No one left me an instruction manual. But more and more of my patients would call me after their sessions and say when they went home, they walked into their house or their apartment and their lamp turned itself on, so they turned it off, and it turned itself back on, and 10 minutes later it turned itself off, and they felt sensations in their hands. They'd hold it by someone in their family, and suddenly the uncle could walk again after the stroke, and the grandmother regained her speech. And we began to recognize that once you interact with this, and we do know that you do have to interact with this, but once you interact with this, you can begin to access this new level of healing that a lot of people in research feel may very well be here for the very first time.
What do you mean, interact?
Well, interact means somehow or other come into contact with it, whether it's as strong as having a healing session or as lightly as being in someone's presence who's a practitioner sitting next to someone in a movie theater, on an airplane, at dinner, or attending seminars, and where you're pretty much like steeping in it like a tea bag.
So have you tried to do it over the telephone or along?
Yeah. You can do it that way too. It does not have to be in person. I guess what I mean, the point of interacting with it is that, you know, every time we're given an opportunity, I guess we're often also given challenges. And one of the challenges in New Age metaphysics is, amazingly enough, where you think the least challenge would be, the ego. You know, if people in the normal 9-to-5 workaday jobs, you know, carried the ego that a lot of people have in the New Age metaphysical field, they'd have no friends, they'd have no jobs. you know, we walk around telling people that, you know, you have a heart that needs to be open. I can see this because my heart's open, and now you need one. And you know, we think that we're transcending the ego, and what we're really doing is giving ourselves excuse to indulge in the ego. And the same thing comes with this new level of healing. What we've shown is that you do have to interact with it. The New Age ego, sometimes some people will say, "Oh well, no, you see, it's all God, it's all love, it's all the same thing." And I can simply ohm it in. And, well, actually, no, you can't. It is all God, it's all love, it's all universe, and it's a new level that we have to interact with first. Just like, well, it would be just like going to the beach, checking into a 24-story hotel and sitting in your hotel room and ohming in the ocean. You can't ohm it in, and if you can't run because it's a tsunami, you know, you have to actually get up off of your spiritual little butt, place it in the elevator, march it downstairs, across the lobby, across the beach, and into the ocean. And then, and only then, you can get as wet with the ocean water as any other human being. And it's the same thing with this new level of healing. We have to first step into the water with it, experience it, dance with it, and then and only then can we access it.
Is it intention-driven, or do you think it's just maybe some kind of resonance that you or your practitioners have obtained that somehow affect other people through entanglement?
Well, it wasn't intention, at least in the beginning. When these healings first started, my patients were coming in to see a chiropractor, and I thought I was one. Now, you can't really double-blind to study a whole lot better than that. I didn't have intention, they didn't have intention, and there it was. Later on, when people started coming in from halfway around the world because they heard about the dramatic healings of, you know, children being able to walk again after cerebral palsy and other such things, they'd travel in often, you know, with a spouse or a close friend or a family member because they couldn't travel alone. And I'd have a nice conversation with a very lovely couple, and then the accompanying spouse would go out to the reception area, and the person I was left with would turn from Dr. Jekyll into Mr. Hyde and say, "Listen, I just want you to know, I think this is a pile of garbage, and I wouldn't be here if my husband or wife didn't make me come."
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd tell them, I'd say, "You know what? You don't have to believe in this. It might not be a great idea to fold one arm over the other and say, 'You can't heal me, you can't heal me.' But maybe if you just say to yourself, maybe it's garbage, and maybe it isn't. But whatever it is, it's a rare opportunity to lie down and rest my eyes for 30 minutes in the middle of the day, so take it." And these are the people who would have the healings. If anyone didn't have the healings, it wasn't the person who didn't believe in it. It was the person who came in believing in it too much. The person who came in saying, "I know this works, it has to work, I've read every book ever written on healing, I've touched the original parchment, I learned the Vedic language just to study it in the original tongue, you know, I've walked in clockwise circles from full moon to full moon, and this month is a blue moon, so I got to moon everyone an extra time, quick, heal me now." That neediness, that attachment, that is our limitation, that's where we restrict. So not believing in something, the point is, you can't be attached to something that you don't believe in. And therein, fascinatingly, lies a secret.
That's really interesting. I'm sitting here looking at your webpage right now, and I'm looking at, what is that, Curlian Photography? Is that how you say that word?
Yeah, Curlian.
What am I looking at here? I see one set of five dots that look very bright and one set that's not very bright. What am I looking
at? Tell me what page you're on, Kate.
I think it's your hands, actually.
Oh, yeah, you're probably looking at... I don't know where it is because I'm not really site familiar. That's why I was saying what page. But that's on the reconnection.com somewhere.
Uh-huh.
What you're seeing is a medical team at the Jackson Memorial Hospital, University of Miami, after they started witnessing these healings, decided to do something with Curlian Photography,
First of all, what is that?
Well, it's a certain type of photography that I believe became famous probably in the 60s or 70s, maybe 80s. The most famous pictures were in Life or Time magazine, Life magazine, I believe. What they did was it takes life energy. It seems to be able to photograph what's considered a life energy field or force. And what they did was they would take a picture of a leaf in darkness, and you would see the whole leaf.
It came from that German research, didn't it?
Russian, I believe. And then you would cut the leaf in half and take the picture again, but it would show the energy form as if the full leaf was there.
That's Fritz Popp's work.
Fritz Popp is doing some amazing things right now with photons. I'm pretty sure he's moved way beyond Curlian at this point, but I'm not certain.
Oh, so that's two different things?
Might be. You're asking me to speak on something I can't say I'm absolutely familiar with Fritz Popp's work specifically. He has some fascinating things. Let me finish answering your question on the Curlian photography.
Okay.
So what you see, you see two pictures. The first picture, the light seems sort of dim, or you see five rings, and those are rings of each of my fingertips. And that's because the medical team just told me to, as much as possible, turn the healing energies off, be neutral. And it's hard to. It's like saying to someone, don't picture an elephant, because, you know, that's the only thing in your mind. But I did the best I could to not have it there. And then they said, now turn it on or activate it, and suddenly you see that deep, bright blue glow. So those are those pictures that I believe they took back in the late 1990s.
This is amazing, Eric. I mean, to see this, because I understand what it is amazing.
Isn't it?
It really is.
It's so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Fritz Popp's work is really exciting today, since you bring him up, because, you know, our bodies don't heal by chemicals, as we were taught, and that's important for us to hear. We don't heal by chemical, as we were taught. We heal by frequency, by vibration, by resonance, and it's communicated through light. Lynn McTaggart speaks about this beautifully in her book, The Field, and I'm sure she also talks about it in her new book, The Intention Experiment. These are wonderful books she's done, where she's taken a lot of the quantum physics and translated it into English. Thank you very much. And what Fritz Popp has demonstrated is that we emit a given level of light. It's not just a spiritual New Age metaphysical phrase, I'm the light, you're the light, you know, isn't that lovely, tra-la-la. Actually, the DNA in each of our cells gives off a given level of light. It's specific to humans, different than for, you know, donkeys or goats or chicken or fish. And when our health is down, our light is actually dimmed. When our health comes back up, our light rises back up to its normal, healthy level.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how we communicate healing throughout the body. This is part of the problem with the chemical model of healing, why it didn't work, because it couldn't explain how we could do something to one area of our bodies and have it have an instant effect to another area. Light helps explain this. So the light is what allows for the informational exchange. This is truly a basis for understanding this more evolved level of healing, because what we have had here on the planet has been energy healing. Reiki, Jirai, Jichin, Shigong, Mahjong, Beijing, EFG, XYZ, 1, 2, 3, and it's all about me. Sweep it up, sweep it down, turn it clockwise, turn it counterclockwise, spray it off, wash it off, shake it off, shout it off. These are all fear-based energy healing techniques, and they limit you to only being able to bring through the energy, which takes away from being able to access the more comprehensive spectrum of energy, light, and information. That's what makes reconnective healing so different. We can go beyond anything we've been able to access in the old or new healing techniques, because it takes us beyond technique, beyond energy, into energy, light, and information. It both allows us to transcend technique and requires that we do. We can't make reconnective healing more by adding a technique to it. We can only make it less when we add technique.
I have a question here. Wait a minute, I lost my train of thought. How do you teach someone to do this? It's obviously a gift.
Well, right, because in the beginning I thought that there was no way that we could teach us, but when we found that once people interacted with it, you know, they had their sessions, they went home, and their lamps and TVs started turning off and on, we recognized that all we really needed to do initially was let people interact with it. And once we did that, then the teaching was teaching how to utilize it. In other words, you don't teach the healing is transmitted as a gift. It's learning how to utilize it, to optimize it, that occurs during the weekend. It's like giving an infant, a toddler, in a high chair an eating utensil. You give them that eating utensil, they have it instantly. But you do spend a little bit of time teaching them that it's not a drumstick and it's not a slingshot. And that's what happens at the Reconnective Healing sessions. We allow you to access this, then we teach you how to actually utilize it. And it comes fairly innately and via instinct, but it does take a little bit of adjustment and refine it. But by the end of one weekend, you are able to access any level of healing that any human being on this planet can access, whether they've been studying for 40 years, you know, or whether they were born with it, it makes no difference.
So give me, tell us a few of the things you would tell someone to give us an idea of what you would teach them.
Well, first of all, let's understand it just a little bit more. Let's finish up with the light just a little bit. William Tiller, you see, we used to be told that we were four-dimensional beings, three-dimensional beings, height, width, and depth. Einstein had been explaining to us since the 1950s that we are four-dimensional. We're height, width, depth, and time. So time is one aspect of who we are. It's one dimension of who we are. And time, height, width, depth, and time comprise this little, what in quantum physics they draw as a bubble, our little playground in which we exist in this multidimensional universe. Time, we understand today, is expanding. It's moving faster, but it's actually opening up and expanding. So our bubble in this universe is expanding. Our capacity to receive is expanding. And that's why we're able to expand beyond energy into energy, light, and information. Now, the communication of healing that goes in our body has to do with light. We always knew, I mean, there are concepts of entropy. Things break down, the faster and faster things go, the more rapidly they degenerate, up until the speed of light. But William Tiller and Einstein and others had discovered that once you move past the speed of light, things move from degeneration into regeneration, from degeneration into healing. So the healing is communicated by experiencing this light. Now, understanding that, when we allow ourselves to feel this new level of healing, we seem to tingle a certain way, which tends to remind us that we are light, because to the degree that we fall away from perfect health, that's the degree to which we have temporarily forgotten who we are, that we are that light, and all we need to do is remind ourselves. And when we allow ourselves to feel this again, because reconnective healing, it's a very highly palpable sensation that you can feel, it reminds you who you are. So what happens is when we begin to feel this and we're sharing a space with another person, we remember who we are, we're reminded of being that light, and through that field, it reminds the other person, and somewhere subconsciously they say, hey, I remember this. This is me vibrating as light, vibrating healthy. I think I'll do it again. And when they do that, anything denser than light, including most health challenges, if appropriate for them, falls away. Healing is that simple. Anything more complicated than that is designed to sell us something. And unfortunately, we've been being sold a lot of things that we just really don't need.
I don't even want to get off on that topic. It makes my bubble start bubbling.
Well, it should. And you know what? It doesn't make everyone happy. It usually frees up the majority of people coming into healing because they've known that certain things have kept them away from it. And people who are invested in trying to sell people more things about healing get a little bit upset at times because, hey, you know, truth is truth. And once it comes out, you can't shove it back into the bag.
Right. You brought up Bill. Have you done some research with him?
Bill Tiller?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually. Matter of fact, if you go onto our website, you'll see some free podcasts that you can download where he explains some of what he thinks makes reconnective healing frequencies very new and very different. He did a study. We were so fortunate, so honored to have him come out and do some research with reconnective healing. He came to an initial seminar when we were teaching a bunch of a group of newcomers how to do this work. And he did measurements on the space before we went in,
mm-hmm.
and found that the space had changed. It was conditioned, is the word that he used.
I understand, yeah.
And as we began to do the weekend, the intensity of what he called free thermodynamic energy
mm-hmm.
became so high, the measurements, that he said that if this were energy healing or just energy, it would have required that the room's temperature raised, get this, over 300 degrees centigrade.
Really?
Uh-huh. So we were so excited and couldn't wait for him to print it, and he said he couldn't. I said, why? He said, because it's so outrageous that I don't think anyone would believe it. He had to actually do it again. So he came out about 6 months later to a different seminar in a different city, measured it again. The results were even higher, and so now it's about to go to publication.
That's amazing. He's one of the most brilliant
physicists
alive today.
Isn't he?
I think. Yeah, he really is. But he takes a lot of problems from people because they don't want to believe it. You know, his peers, they don't want to believe it.
You know, you have to, you know, sometimes you have to put on your steel-toed boots and recognize that you're going to step on a couple of toes to make some change. But in order to make change, if change is important to you, you walk forward and you do it. Hopefully people wake up and come along with you, and a few people will be upset that you upset the apple cart.
He's changing the world.
Yes, he is.
Eric, he really is.
One of many. Gary Schwartz is doing some wonderful things as well.
Yeah, I got Gary coming in a few weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Gary's done research on this also.
Interesting. So give us some ideas of what you would tell somebody to do after they've been in your presence.
Well, here's what happens. I don't want to, you know, sound like they've been in my presence like I'm Guru Mai or something. But what happens is generally, if you know, look and see when we're coming to your country or your city or somewhere, what we'll tend to do is on a Friday night, I'll do a three-hour presentation. We talk about the history of the work, the theory behind it, some of the research, and then we bring volunteers up from the audience and demonstrate the healing so you can see them happen live on people with, you know, medical histories and, you know, of what's going on. And somehow or other, you do become immersed in it during that time frame. Now, for people who want to learn the work, then we teach it all day that Saturday and Sunday.
I want to have an idea of what it is. How do you teach it?
Well, that's where I'm going into.
Sentence.
So what will happen is we'll set up a stage central in a very large room. And on one side of the room, it will have chairs, and on the other side, it will have massage tables, one massage table for every four people in attendance, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in the chairs, I'll demonstrate a level of the healing, talk about what it feels like and how to look for it. Then we'll all go to tables in groups of two or four, depending on what we're doing. And I walk around to each table, and I have teaching assistants who fly in from all around the world to help with this, and they'll come around too, and we'll work with your hands, and we'll say, now, just change the angle of your hand here. Now look at the person on the table, and you'll start to see the person on the table, their muscles will move differently in their face mm-hmm. or their fingers or their feet, and say, now notice what you feel different in your hand, and you start to recognize it. We say, great, you know, and we go through the whole thing, then we go back to the chairs, we talk about what we did, we demonstrate another level, we go back to the table. Don't come if you think we're all going to sit around, hold hands, om, and sing Kumbaya, my Lord, because it is a working seminar. And you will master this by Sunday if it kills you. But, you know, it's not another seminar where we all sit around and say, isn't that what you think, and that's lovely, and is that what you think, and isn't that lovely, too? This is, there's something new. Here's how you can find it. Stay focused through the weekend, and by the end of the weekend, you'll be able to do anything that Eric can do and anything that any healer on the planet can do, whether they live on a mountaintop in Tibet or deep in the heart of Brazil.
So would what we're doing right now, would that be considered interacting?
In a sense, it could be.
I'm not able to do what Eric does.
I can take us through it a little bit, and some of us will get what we're doing right here on the air, and others will simply be able to find what they've already known how to find because let's face it, when you're working one-on-one in person, the healing's a whole, well, the teaching's a whole lot different. I mean, I could say, hold your hand out to your side with your thumb up towards the ceiling and your little finger pointing towards your nose, and everyone could do that and not be doing the very same thing because of the way we interpret the words. That's
right.
Why in-person issues. Teaching is very important.
So give us an idea, if you can.
Okay, well, let's try this. Right now, if you let your hands fall to your sides, you'll see the position your hands fall into naturally. That's called normal anatomic position of the hand. Your fingers have approximately a 60-degree arc or a curve to them. You can see a little bit of space between them or air. If you bring your hands up in front of you, hold them palms facing each other as if they're holding the rib cage of maybe a 40-pound child. Feel that little firmness, the arch in the hand. The muscles are a little firm in the palms. Now, can you get there with me?
I'm following you.
Okay, good. Now, keeping that little bit of firmness in the musculature, just slightly bring your hand up 6 or 8 inches, then glide it down to where it was, then continue down another 6 or 8 inches, glide it back up to where it was, come back higher again, bring it back down again. Can you find that you recognize a sensation at your neutral starting point that's a little bit different than when you bring it all the way down or all the way up?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Like a magnetism or something?
In a sense. Now, what we've discovered with this, Bill Tiller is one of the first people to say, this takes us beyond electromagnetic fields into something he called magnetoelectric. And I said, isn't that the same thing? And he said, no, it's entirely different. But I don't know how to explain how it's entirely different.
I actually interviewed him about that, so I know what you're talking about.
Okay, good. So this is the beginning of how to feel it. Now, now, when you have someone lying down on a table and you began to interact with this new spectrum of frequencies, you will start to see immediately, in most situations, almost every time, their eyes begin to move rapidly, tiny little muscles around their mouth, the little involuntary muscles around the eyebrows making those move, and then as you pull or stretch this sensation outward, it's like stretching taffy from the center of your hand, the further you pull, the stronger it becomes.
Now I have a question. Do you just do this, or do you put your hands over someone and do that?
Well, you know, it depends on the moment. It's because what it is that there is no technique. It's that there is the ability to recognize something, find it, and play with it. It would be as if, let's say, you and I were on the beach in Jamaica, the air was warm and the water was warmer, and we're having a conversation, and we walk out into the water while we're talking. And, of course, you know, you feel the little microcurrents of the ocean water with your hands, and you begin to play with them and let your palms ride over the microcurrents. Now, some of the times your hands might be moving in a circular fashion, and some of the time it might be moving lateral, sometimes towards you, sometimes away, sometimes up and down. If I said to you, well, do you move them this way or that way, how could you answer me?
Right. I have a question about these. I can't stop looking at these photographs here. When your hands are in that healing mode, do they get hot? Do your fingertips get hot?
Well, when you're doing energy healing, there's a tendency to go towards warmth. When you're doing this, sometimes they get warm, often they get cold. Sometimes they feel dry, sometimes wet, sometimes pushing, sometimes pulling, sometimes bubbling, sometimes drawn towards one another, sometimes pushed away. Sometimes it seems as if they are a series of contradictory sensations that you don't know how you can have at once, but you do, such as hot, cold, wet, and dry at the same time.
Okay, now I want to ask you some different questions.
Sure.
I know that most people that have, well, I won't say most, but a lot of the people that have sudden events like this, including myself, but you know, I'm a medical intuitive, and it came in an instant one day. But it came right after a terribly dark night of the soul. And I want to know, did you have to go through a dark night of the soul before this happened to you?
I went through it after.
What happened?
Wait, let me
was
think.
It this
wait. Now I'm going to think about this for a moment. No.
We don't know why.
I went through it first.
Noetic Science has just finished a 10-year research project on these kinds of things. And for whatever reason, it's like consciousness has to strip away every bit of our ego and take it away. And
I went through it first. You're right. I went through it another time, something else differently later, but I didn't even think about this. I ended a 6-year relationship, which I thought was going to be the relationship of my life. I had trouble physically. This is not an expression. I mean, physically, I had trouble actually picking up one foot and putting in front of the other to walk from patient to patient for the good part of a week. At the same time, I was having a lot of trouble with my staff. I couldn't put my finger on the problem. I had no more emotional reserves left within me. So I did what a practice management group suggested. I let everyone go at once. So now I'm in this emotional turmoil, and there's no one in my office. So I'm adjusting the patients, answering the phones, filling out the insurance forms, making the change, scheduling the booking, stamping the envelopes, and chasing the postman. This lasted for about an hour. And I finally had to rehire people, and in that rehiring, I hired a very strange woman who was both the physical and audible incarnation, if you can believe it, of Fran Drescher's character, the nanny. And she dragged me off to the beach one day, introduced me to some woman doing some strange work, and said, you need to have this work done. And I said, well, I really didn't want to go to some card reader on a beach, you know, with a folding chairs and a card table. But I went and I talked to her, and the woman explained that I needed some work done because the meridian lines that are on our bodies used to be much more powerful, part of a more comprehensive system than they are today. They used to continue off of our bodies, tie into the ley lines that encircle the planet, you know, crossing at the high energy vortex areas of the globe, Machu Picchu and Sedona and Giza and the other places. And from there, they'd continue out to the other stars and planets. But as she went on to explain, she said, at a certain point in time, humanity became disconnected from this system. Now, the universe continued to evolve and unfold at its great and wondrous rate, but we as human beings, our evolution seemed to slow down, and she could do this certain kind of work to bring us back into this system more rapidly instead of waiting for this to evolve over generations. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. How much do you want? She said, $333. And I said, no, thank you, because I could think of a lot of things to do with that money, and giving it to some stranger on the beach wasn't on my list. But she said, well, you know what? Here, you can read about it in this book. So I go off, and I'm thinking I'll never think about it again, but I do read about it, and I find myself thinking about it and thinking about it, and I finally decide I'm going to let her do the work. So I call her back up to make the appointments because I spent so much time looking at it that I figured it would just be cheaper to pay the money and let her do the sessions on me. And she has me show up the first day and places me on a massage table and dims lights and puts on that new age tinkly music we've all grown to know and love, and starts tracing line patterns over my face and body, all the while I'm thinking I couldn't have done anything more ridiculous in my life. And at the end of that session, I felt nothing. I knew there was nothing sillier I could do than agree to come back for part two. I went home, and that was the night when I went to sleep that I was awakened, when my lamp turned itself back on. Now, that's, in a sense, where a certain part of this story begins, and it came out of a dark night of the soul situation. The thing is that work that woman had done to me, I've stayed in touch with her throughout the time, and the woman who taught her how to do it, had never had this response in anyone before or after. So it seemed that everyone was pretty much in agreement that they had learned this kind of an axiatonal type of a work, like the first person who channeled it in created a key, and then made duplicates of the key by teaching it to other people and said, keep trying doors, there's a door somewhere that's supposed to open up. And I guess I was that door or that lock that unlocked and opened up. I'm not the gift. I mean, if Oprah Winfrey walks in through your door, you're not going to run over your door and go, gee, what a great door. I mean, Oprah's the gift. But apparently, I was this doorway that seemed to open up, and what came through does not require any longer that any work be done, any lines drawn or special procedures, just simply the interaction with it gets you there, just like the interaction of dipping yourself into the ocean gets you wet with salt water.
So how did it, let's step aside from the healing for a minute, because I also know that every time somebody does go through something like this, it radically changes their lives. How did it affect yours?
Well,
I mean, a lot of people feel like they're alone in the world suddenly, even though they have all of this great ability. They're different.
This was simultaneously, it was stranger than anything you could imagine. Absolutely awesome, and simultaneously more familiar than anything I could explain. It's more that I simply began to find myself. You could go through ways of looking at it as, did you have experiences of feeling alone? Did you have experiences of feeling at one? I mean, in the beginning when this work started to happen, I just thought, well, something's going on that must be happening to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out looking for other people who would have this. And I met lots of people that I found and who found me and who all said that they had the same thing. And the one thing I found out was that no one did. So on one hand, I'm going, well, gee, it can't only be me. But maybe it could have been, and it seems as if it was, but yet for only a second. Because once it came rushing in, everyone who interacted with this seemed to be able to carry it to the degree that they were able to put down the techniques of what they were doing. See, this is the challenge. The challenge of accessing something new comes in being able to transcend the technique and being willing to transcend the technique. I mean, techniques are wonderful. Techniques are wonderful. They're gifts. They're like training wheels on a bicycle. If you have a small child and you get that child a big bicycle, you know, thank God for training wheels. You know, put the training wheels on, the child can tip to the right, tip to the left safely without getting injured, and begin to find their sensation of balance. But eventually, the adult knows that you've got to remove the training wheels or that child will never master the bicycle. The thing is, with healing techniques, we don't always have that larger perspective around us. So what happens is, you know, we take a healing technique, step halfway and you get closer, step halfway, you get closer again, step halfway, you get closer again, and we find that we're getting closer to mastering the healing. Just like riding with training wheels gets you closer to the bicycle. And the child might say, well, I'm good with one set of training wheels, so let me put on a second set and a third set. And you get better and better at riding the bicycle with training wheels, but never the bicycle. With healing techniques, we add technique A, technique B, technique C, and we keep getting closer to the healing. But you see, often there's no one around to tell us that the gift of the technique comes only in its transcendence. The way to honor the master is to transcend the method and the technique. And a lot of people feel an allegiance to their technique, and they forget that no one ever learned Reiki. I'll use that as a generic, example of an energy healing technique. No one ever learned Reiki because their path was to become a Reiki master teacher. They learned Reiki because their path was to become a healer. They put on the training wheels to find their healing, but they have to take them off. Does this make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it frightens a lot of people, specifically healing technique teachers. Because masters, teachers tell you to come back and learn more. Teachers teach you. Masters don't teach you. You allow yourself to learn in the presence of a master. The teacher tells you to come back and learn more, come back and learn more, and by the way, write me a new check that my husband can deposit each year. The master says you've got to move forward and discover your mastery in the silence of your own mind. And you have to make room for new students, because there will always be the new student as long as there is truth to be be
I
taught.
I think that it limits them, people, to have one specific thing they're set on.
Of course.
Quite frankly.
And you can't ride a bicycle with 8 sets of training wheels. And you can't become, you can't master healing as long as you're turning in clockwise circles and doing Japanese symbols in the air and spraying your body off with alcohol afraid you'll get some negative energy on you. I mean, we inflict fear into the unwitting new student to the healing process. We disguise fear-based concepts as love. We tell people, oh, you have to move your hands in a clockwise circle because clockwise brings in the good energy. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, subconsciously, what do we hear? Counterclockwise brings in bad energy.
Right.
Until we find a technique where they like you to do counterclockwise, and then they hear that clockwise brings in bad energy.
Right.
We tell ourselves to not eat in the healing room, and that we should do this, and after the healing sessions, to shake off the negative energy and spray ourselves off with alcohol. And the point is, there's nothing that we need to protect ourselves from. Every time we try to protect ourselves, what we do is we introduce more fear into the equation, and fear takes us away from love. If you're, you know, think of the techniques we, like, they want you to, for instance, shake off the negative energy and then spray your body down with alcohol because there might be something left on you. You should only be so fortunate that there's something left on you, because if there's something left on you from the healing session, it's the love and the beauty of the universal healing process. It's like getting out of bed in the morning from that one special person in your life, going downstairs, reaching for something, you know, in a cabinet, and getting the slight scent of his or her body on yours and re-experiencing that warmth of who that person is. That love, you know, you just don't really feel like reaching for a bottle of alcohol to spray that off with.
Sorry. Well, we've got about 15 minutes. I want to hear some stories of success.
Healing stories?
Mm-hmm. I know you've got some.
I mean, where do you begin with healing stories?
I
love
the best
children.
Ones.
Let's see. Well, there is no best, because...
Let me rephrase that. Linguistics here, Eric.
Okay.
Give us some dramatic ones.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. All right, well, let's see. I was just talking
children.
To someone about little Brian. This boy, Brian, is 4.5 years old. His parents brought him in because he had cerebral palsy. It was so severe that he was not able to... stand without pulling himself up on furniture and clothing and holding on to people. He couldn't get the heels of his feet down. He had to stand on his toes, and he was scheduled for surgery to see if they could release the calf muscles so his full foot could touch the ground. His arms fell in that palsy style, you know, where the forearm is parallel to the ground and the wrists are hanging loosely. And he wasn't able to speak. He could only get some monosyllabic sounds out of his mouth. His parents brought him in, and my assistant had set him up on a massage table before I was on the room. So his mother was sitting on the massage table with him, keeping, you know, his attention occupied, and he was on the table, and I came over and sat down there with him and just really held my hands near him and began to feel. Just feel. It's like listening with your hands, listening with a different sense. And as I would do that, his eyes would seem to move differently, and he would go, wet, wet, you're wet. I guess he saw everyone as appearing wet, which is funny because a lot of people see people as appearing underwater. But as we did the session for about maybe 25 to 30 minutes, and afterwards the parents said, we want you to see how little Brian walks. Because Brian was already in the table when I came in. And I said, I don't really need to see how he walks, and because it doesn't matter what I know or what I don't know. He's going to have the same healing anyway. And they said, well, we want you to see how he walks. I said, all right, because they had described how he walked, and I believed them. So they took him off the table. The father held him on one side of the room, or the mother held him on one side. The father was the other. And he said, Brian, walk your father. And Brian got halfway around the room, and suddenly the mother's voice changed. She said, no, Brian, show Dr. Pearl how you walk. because suddenly they realized he was walking with his feet flat on the ground, his arms to his sides, and without holding on to anyone. Later, Brian came on to a show on Extra TV with the parents. It turned out that the father was a prominent medical doctor and the mother was a nurse or a nurse practitioner. The whole family learned how to do this work, and so did Brian's physical therapist, speech and occupational therapist.
That's amazing, Eric.
But, you know, to talk about healing stories, it's not... Everyone, once you learn how to do this work, will have these healing stories, and they're all wonderful. What's important is the concept of recognizing that there's a new level of healing that we can access and share with one another. And healing isn't just about being able to walk again or getting up out of the wheelchair or regaining your speech. Healing is also about human evolution. I believe that this new level of healing, reconnective healing, is restructuring, reconnecting or restructuring our DNA. And what this means to us is that we're on the precipice of evolution as human beings, the next level of our evolution. Think of it, well, let's think about how brains work and how our computers work. For instance, our computers work, you know, we've got a hardware computer and then we put software into it. We access information from the software in the computer and we access information from that internet field out there somewhere. When we upgrade software in our computer, we get more information from the computer itself and better access to that internet field. Do you know that our brains work the same way? And Lynn McTaggart's book, The Field, will explain this and so will others. It's not what we used to be taught. It's not that memory is here and learning is here and speech is here. We actually get information from all over the brain, and we access information from what in science is called zero-point field, that field that we exist in and that we are a part of. So you and I and all of your listeners, we're all part of the same field. We might be denser in certain places where we're in human form and less dense in other places, but we're part of the same field. So what if our DNA is our software and our brains are our hardware? What if what happens is our DNA allows us to access certain information from the brain itself and certain information from that field out there somewhere? And what if the restructuring of our DNA, the reconnecting of these strands, is an upgrade in our software, therefore allowing our brains to access more information from within the brain and more information from that field out there somewhere? Then what's happening is that the upgrade in our DNA is allowing us to become more multidimensional human beings as we interact with a more multidimensional universe.
I have to make a comment here, because I happen to think about this a lot, this particular thing you're talking about.
Sure.
Before I even say this, I want to tell you there's a new book out there you might really like. It's called The Spiritual Brain. And it's brand new out on the market, and I can't think of the guy's name because he's a French neurologist or neuroscientist, something
uh-huh.
like that. But he opens up some big doors about what goes on in the brain and consciousness. You would really probably like to look at that with what you're doing. Mario something's his name. It's not hard to find, but he's going to start working with Noetic Sciences, and I think Tiller wrote his forward, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know what I think about that DNA thing, but what I do think a lot about is I know that things like the zero-point field emits a frequency of B-flat. We know that. And I do know that...
How do you know it's not F-sharp?
It's B-flat. It just is.
Okay.
The sound that comes from the black holes is B-flat. It also, there's a sound that comes in people... I was talking to Irvin Laszlo about this a couple of weeks ago. People that have enlightenment experiences or gets close to enlightenment experience, they hear a sound in their head. It's a high-pitched frequency. And it's also a B-flat. And there's not a lot of people out there, but every mastered teacher that I've ever talked to about this has that sound. They don't know why they had that sound, but when I say, do you hear this high-pitched sound in your head? They'll go, yeah, that's what it is. So I went looking on the Internet when Irvin and I were talking about it, because I hear it in my head, and that's exactly the sound that it is, so it's pretty amazing. But anyway, and we know that the Earth's internal frequency is raising. You know, it's gone from like 8 to about 13. And I think that information being encoded within frequencies, and there's that word, people have trouble with that word, frequencies, but the higher someone's consciousness is, the more information that's available to them, because information's encoded within frequencies. Kind of like when you strum a piano, you know, string. And we know that mass consciousness is raising because they've had more people that's had spiritual enlightenment and more people that's had things like you since the early to mid-90s than ever before in the history of time. So I don't know what I think about it being the DNA, but I do know that it has something to do with resonant frequencies.
Of course.
And the raising of mass consciousness, and it has to come from quantum entanglement and deep down within that zero-point field. Because I think the zero-point field, and I've talked to Bill about this a lot, is actually maybe the dividing line between duality. So I think it goes way down deep in there.
Well, there are reasons that I know within me that it is DNA, and it does have to do with strands, and it does have to do with simultaneous planes of existence, which would take some going into. And
I think that's absolutely true.
And even then, I can't prove it to anyone. It's one of those things that I have to know, be able to share my truth, and it either resonates or it doesn't.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just making comments. I don't know what I think.
I know.
I just don't.
But isn't that wonderful? Because the three most important words in certain situations we can utter are "I don't know," because the moment we say we know the answer, we stop learning.
Yeah, we're in
right
trouble.
There on the spot, right? We say this is right, so this is wrong. This is right, so that's wrong, and we limit it to, you know, that kind of a dogma. And the point is, when we're willing to say "I don't know," then we're willing to say "I don't know, but I don't know, but I can see how of this and possibly that, and I can see how of that and possibly the other," which leads us to better answers, which aren't really answers at all. They're actually material building blocks for better questions, because the growth is in the questioning.
Yeah, I agree with that. There was something else I wanted to ask.
Now, you mentioned Irvin Laszlo.
Uh-huh.
We're doing two international conferences this year. One we're doing in somewhere in Germany. I can't think of what city that it is. And the other one we're doing in Los Angeles. And Irvin Laszlo is going to be speaking at the one in Germany, and also at some of the different ones we're having. Bill Tiller will be there. Bruce Lipton will be there. Lynn McTaggart will be there. Lee Carroll will be there. I'm trying to think of who else. But a lot of wonderful presenters and speakers were talking about helping us be able to recognize a new level of healing that we can access here on the planet.
That's a wonderful thing. Well, so when is it?
Well, one is in September. You're asking me something that I really should know, but I don't. one is in September, and the other one, I think, is in June. And I'll tell you right now as we're speaking. So I'm going to say that one is in June, and I think that's the Los Angeles one.
I guess they would find out that
Germany. Here we go. Germany is in Hamburg,
okay.
And it is June 12 through 15. And yeah, they can go by going onto thereconnection.com. It's the same as the book title, The Reconnection: Heal Others, Heal Yourself. But the Hamburg conference is the second week in June, and I believe that the Los Angeles seminar and conference comes right up following that, in September-ish.
Well, I know everybody will want to make that.
But we're doing seminar. The book, The Reconnection, is in 27 languages. Yes, it is. Los Angeles seminars will be in September. And it's in 27 languages, so we're doing seminars all over the world, Romania and Czech Republic and South Africa and Istanbul and you name it, we're there.
Are you going to come through Atlanta anytime soon?
We haven't done Atlanta for a couple of years. What we usually, we can only get so many in the U.S. each year, so we go according to the number of emails that we get. So we get a large number of people pushing for Atlanta, then we'll try and set one up for Atlanta as one of the U.S. seminars next year.
That would be great. I'd love to see you here. So take, you got 4 minutes to say whatever you want to say. Change the world.
4 minutes to say whatever I want to say. I want you to know I've been saying whatever I want to say as we've been talking. The point is there's something new, there's something exciting. If we allow ourselves jump past the ego of feeling that what we've done has been the one and only right way, we can find something new. The excitement comes, the doors open, the moment we're willing to say, I don't know. Well, I don't know what this is, and I don't know what this isn't, but I do know, I definitely, because I don't know what it isn't, it is more than I know now. And this opens us up for such potential. These healings, we've never seen this level of healing before, and the one way to access it is to simply be willing to observe it.
Thank you, Eric, for doing what you do.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
And why don't you give everybody an email to contact your...
Info, I-N-F-O, as in information, info@thereconnection.com. And you can find out about the seminars. Go to thereconnection.com to find out about that, or start with the book, because the book is written in three portions, the history of it, the theory of it, and the third portion of it is a how-to. So you can begin to learn this work from reading The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself, and you can go right on to Amazon.com or any major bookstore and find it.
Well, I have to tell you, I have so many books I have to read for my show, but I actually got, the way you wrote it was interesting enough that I took it on the train and actually took it up into the law office where I work to read. Unfortunately,
I'm glad
I forgot it this weekend, but I like the book. It's a good book. People will have a good read by it. Not just learn something, but have an interesting read. Thanks, Eric, and I hope maybe you'll come back sometime.
I would love to.
And if you come to Atlanta, make sure you let me
know. I'll be there.
All right.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.